Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times best-selling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey guys, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show, where we help you to stand out and to get ahead at work. Now, as you know, we like to switch things up here, keep it interesting, and to continue that tradition, today on the podcast, instead of me interviewing an expert guest, we're going to have the guest deep dive into their topic. You see, you'll be hearing audio from a LeadX webinar. Now, of course, there are dozens of great webinars on leadership, management, communication, productivity, and more, all archived in the LeadX app. Just visit leadx.org for more information about our webinar archive. So enough on the setup, enough background information. Here is Vanya Mathis to introduce our guest and to hand it over to them. Enjoy.
Hi, thanks for joining today's webinar on optimal outcomes. Our host today is the founder and CEO of Alignment Strategies Group, the New York-based consulting firm that advises CEOs and their executive teams on how to optimize organizational health and growth. She's the author of Optimal Outcomes, Free Yourself from Conflict at Work, at Home, and in Life, which was selected as the Financial Times Book of the Month. Jennifer is a keynote speaker at Fortune 500 companies, public institutions, and innovative, fast-growing startups, where she inspires audiences of all kinds, including those at Google, Harvard, and TEDx, and in her popular course at Columbia University. A former counterterrorism research fellow with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, she is a graduate of Tufts University and holds a PhD in social organizational psychology from Columbia. Please welcome Dr. Jennifer Goldman Wetzler.
These are trying times that we're in. We are in the midst right now, 2 months into the global pandemic of coronavirus, and we're facing a big, tough global problem, the likes of which most of us have never seen in our lifetimes. I've spent my career studying and working with incredibly tough problems, none on this scale, but tough problems nonetheless. Typically, the tougher the problem, the more likely it is to capture my interest and the more likely I am to be helpful. This has been true for me since I was a kid. So I didn't want to solve just one or two sides of the Rubik's Cube. I wanted to solve all six sides while hula hooping. And that's why today we're going to be talking about a tough problem, tough type of problem, conflict, that comes back no matter how many times you or other people have tried to resolve it. We'll be talking about recurring conflicts and what to do when your efforts to resolve those conflicts fail. So in a minute, I'm going to be asking you to think of a conflict situation that you know about so that you can apply your situation, well, so you can apply these practices to that situation. But first, I want to give you an introduction to this work. In 1973, one of my mentors, Dr. Mort Deutsch, widely considered father of conflict resolution, wrote a book called The Resolution of Conflict. And in it, he detailed research that he and his colleagues had done, which basically showed that conflict leads to more conflict and cooperation leads to more cooperation. When I learned that, all I could think was, well, if that's true, how do we get out of this conflict loop and how do we get on to the cooperation loop? Well, I've now spent the last 13 years trying to answer those questions. And the answers are in the book that I've written, Optimal Outcomes, that we're talking about today. My research began with a fellowship from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security in 2002. And since then, in my role as CEO and founder of Alignment Strategies Group, I've worked with leaders in all kinds of different organizations, from innovative, fast-growing startups to Fortune 500 companies, to academic institutions, to global nonprofits. And what I've done is help them by using the optimal outcomes method to address the most challenging situations that they have faced. And I'd like to bring some of that work here for you today. So I'll be talking about a specific client situation throughout today's webinar. But I also want this presentation to be highly relevant to you. So I'd like to take a moment now to ask you to think of a situation that you know about. It could be one from your own life, or it could be one that you're helping other people with, or it could be one that you know about simply from watching the news. And I'd like to ask you to answer two questions. First of all, you're thinking about a conflict situation, but it may be one that you don't even necessarily think about as quote unquote conflict. It may be something that simply recurs over and over again, no matter how many times you or other people have tried to resolve it. Could be the daily fight with your spouse about the dishes in the sink, or it could be how to track down that colleague that's always been hard to reach, and now that you're working remotely is even more difficult to find to get the answers that you need. Or it could be about politics and elections and presidential elections and how to have conversations about those without getting caught in a cycle of frustration with friends and colleagues and family. So take a moment to ask yourself these two questions. Who's involved and what are the people concerned about? You can even hit pause on the webinar to just take a moment to think of your situation and then come back. Okay, so I'd like you to keep in mind this situation that you're thinking about as we walk through the practices. But first, I'll give you a little bit more detail about what it is that we're talking about. When we're stuck in recurring conflict, our conflict habit interacts with other people's conflict habit to form a pattern of interaction that keeps us stuck on this conflict loop. What do I mean by conflict habit? These are things like blaming other people, or avoiding other people, or blaming ourselves, or relentlessly seeking to collaborate with other people, even when they are not interested in collaborating with us. So the key is to notice this conflict habit and their conflict habit and our conflict habit, how they get stuck in this pattern of interaction, and then ask ourselves, how can we break free from this conflict loop? The best way that I know how is to take pattern-breaking action. But as I said, this conflict loop is typically so self-reinforcing, so strong, that even pattern-breaking action makes it very difficult to break free from the loop. So what can we do? First of all, stop trying to resolve something that has shown itself to be unresolvable. Instead, free yourself from the loop altogether by breaking the pattern of the conflict loop. But as I said, the pattern breaking action can be so difficult to take. We need to do something else in addition, which is we need to imagine what an optimal outcome may be, to have that be like a magnet pulling us out of the conflict loop from the outside as well. And in addition, I encourage us to take pattern breaking action over time, to design, test, and ultimately take a pattern breaking path from out of the conflict loop into an optimal outcomes loop, which then becomes its own self-reinforcing loop. But what is an optimal outcome anyway? Typically, when we're stuck in recurring conflict, we are looking backwards at what went wrong and who's to blame. So we want to look forward into the future, but we don't just want to use our rational thinking brain to do this. Because if our rational thinking brain could have solved the problem, it probably would have done so a long time ago. Instead, we want to use our imagination to imagine an ideal future. We want to ask ourselves and want to use all five of our senses plus our emotions to do so. So what will it look like in that ideal future state? And what will it sound like? And what will it even taste like or smell like? What will it feel like in that future? But we don't want to stop there. We also need to take into account the reality of the situation we're facing. And we want to think about who are the people, and not just what they care about, but who they are as human beings with all of their strengths and their limitations, and the constraints of the situation itself, and the reality of who we ourselves are, with all of our own strengths and our own limitations. So an optimal outcome takes into account our ideal imagined future and the reality of the situation we're facing. That's how I define an optimal outcome. So I just gave you a very quick overview of all the practices in the optimal outcomes method, and there are 8 of them. But now I want to dive into just 4 of them so that each and every person watching this webinar can walk away immediately with something tangible that you can do to break free from conflict in your own life. The 4 practices are: map it out, honor your shadow values, listen to your emotions, and design a pattern-breaking path. Now, most of these practices require looking deeply within yourself, so they are not necessarily easy to do. But I promise you that if you gather the courage to do them, you will free yourself from situations that seem right now impossible to solve. I call these practices because it takes practice to get good at them. Just like you may have a practice of yoga, or a practice of meditation, or even a practice of brushing your teeth, I encourage us all to do these practices on a daily basis to get good at them over time. So let's dive in. Practice 1, map it out. When we're stuck in recurring conflict, we're typically looking at a situation in very simple terms. It's about me and you. When in fact, most recurring conflict situations are much more complex. So we want to map out the situation to notice all of the nuances in the situation so that we can have more levers for change. This is what typically happens, is that when we start to notice the complexity in a situation, we notice levers for change that simply were not possible for us to see before. We also can raise our empathy, both for ourselves and for other people on our map. So I'm going to show you in a moment the example of a map from one of my clients, and then I'm going to give you actually a chance to create your own map. In even just a few minutes, I've seen people have immense insight from doing this exercise, this practice. But first, I'm going to walk you through 4 steps to creating your conflict map. And this PDF that I'm going to show you, you can download it for yourself on optimaloutcomesbook.com/map. And you'll have the opportunity, actually, you'll see on the second page, there's a link also where you can go to create your online map by using some very cool online mapping software. So it's all fun, good stuff to try out. So 4 easy steps. First step, sketch your map out. Just starting with the 2 people or however many people you thought of when I asked you a few minutes ago who was involved in the situation you're thinking about, put those people down on your map, put their names down, draw circles around the names and lines to show how they're connected to each other. Step 2, add as many people, places, events, factors on your map that you can. Anything that influences or might be influenced by the situation, put that on your map. And the 3rd step, get creative. Put anything on your map that will help you tell the story of the situation in a different way than you have before. I've seen people put colors on their map, names of emotions on their map, icons, like here we see a heart and an X to show relationships that are doing well, full of love, and relationships that are not doing so well. Anything on your map that will help you tell the story in a different way. And finally, the last step is to observe your map. Take a step back and ask yourself, what story does this map tell that I didn't notice before? So here is a story about my client, Bob. Bob is the CEO of a startup software company in New York City. And he has gotten into a large, huge screaming match fight with his top salesperson, Sally. She's a co-founder. They've been friends for many years, never a romantic relationship, just good friends. And when Bob comes to me, he has spent 6 months not talking to Sally because 6 months ago, he and Sally got stuck in a huge screaming fight on a New York City street corner. According to Bob, this is how it went. They left a client meeting in a restaurant. they got onto the street, Bob decided to casually bring up the issue of Sally's compensation. And according to Bob, Sally immediately started yelling at him. How could you do this? This is not an appropriate time to talk about this. I don't want to talk about it. So what did Bob do? He screamed right back. Sally, you always say this. When are we ever going to talk about this? I can't believe this is happening. And at some point, they're just screaming. At some point, Bob turns on his heel, walks back to the office separately from Sally, and they have not talked to each other. And she returns to the office separately as well. They have not talked to each other in 6 months. So why are they having this fight? Bob says Sally's compensation package has not changed since the company was founded several years ago. And so she could literally never answer the phone and she would still max out her commissions because she's being rewarded the same way today as she was many years ago. But now her job is much, much easier. They have many more marketing dollars behind her, etc. So he says, we need to bring this in line. This is just not working for me. It's not working for the company. And every time I bring it up, the same thing happens. She starts screaming, it's not okay to talk about it. And then I yell back and then it's a big blow up and it ends with us avoiding each other for many weeks and months. So I say, okay, Bob, let's understand a bit more of what's going on in this situation. Tell me a little bit more. He says, you know, I just can't stand how selfish Sally is. Why does she only care about her own compensation? Why does she not care about how the company is doing overall? So I say, Bob, what do you know about Sally's background? Anything you know about her that might explain her behavior, might help us understand why she's acting the way that you say she is. And he says, well, I know where Sally, I know about a little bit about her background. We've been friends for many years. And she's told me about growing up in the Midwest during winters where her family didn't have enough heat, didn't have enough food to eat. They didn't have a lot of financial resources and it was very difficult for her. And I also know that she's single. So she knows she has no one to fall back on if she should falter financially. And he says, I know that today, objectively speaking, she's okay financially, but she may be afraid that she won't have enough given where she came from. So I say, okay, Bob, that's helpful. Who else is involved here? So Bob says, well, the exec team, including the CFO who has been putting pressure on me to lower Sally's compensation, and then the sales team surrounding Sally. The venture capital investors who have also been pressuring me, Bob, to lower Sally's compensation. And also my background, my family. So my father and my brother are also entrepreneurs. And I grew up from a very young age with them telling me how great it would be to be an entrepreneurial risk taker just like them. And I've always wanted to. And I'm so proud of myself that I am. And also Bob realizes he grew up as an adult, grew up in the software industry, which has a very high value on collaboration and collaborative leadership. So he has always prized himself on this ability to be a collaborative leader. And that's one reason why it upsets him so much that Sally is not seeing him as being on her side. So we see from just a few minutes of mapping here that a situation that at first seemed simple, like two people screaming at each other on a New York City street corner, is actually a bit more complex than that. Bob, thinking about Sally's background, has helped him raise his empathy for her, for where she comes from. It has also helped him see levers for potential change that he didn't notice before, and it also helps him raise his empathy and his compassion for himself about why where he comes from has influenced him. So take a moment now. You can hit pause on the webinar and sketch out your own map in the situation that you're thinking about. And then notice, take your step back and notice what insight do you get from doing this practice. Practice 2, honor your shadow values. Shadow values, the way I define them, is that these are things that we really care about in life that we would never admit to ourselves or anyone else that we care about. We push them down out of our conscious awareness. These are things like status, power, control, financial stability. Shadow values tend to wreak havoc on our relationships with other people because we've pushed them down, we're not aware they exist, and yet they ooze out anyway, really wreaking havoc on our relationships with other people. Shadow values are in contrast to what I call our ideal values. These are things that we care about in life that we're proud to say that we care about. So some classic ideal values might be things like leadership, adventure, healthy living, spirituality. What were Bob's ideal values? This was not hard for Bob to notice. He knew that he wanted to be an entrepreneurial risk taker, just like his father and brother. This was something he valued. And collaboration. He wanted to be a collaborative leader. This is what he had learned from a young age from growing up in the software industry. And when I asked him what his shadow values are, this was a bit harder for him to think about and to answer, but he thought about it. And what he noticed was, in the past few months, while this conversation or this fight with Sally was happening, he was about to put his first child through college. So he was worried about money, and he wanted to have a financially stable situation so that he could comfortably put his child through college. In addition, Bob had just hired a new CFO because he wanted to sell his company, and he was getting ready to put the company up for sale. So that also contributed to his need for financial, or his value on financial stability, more now than ever. But when he really thought about it, he realized that he had always had this value of financial stability, and it always seemed to be in tension with this value of being an entrepreneurial risk taker, as if he couldn't have one side by side with the other. And we'll talk about that more in a moment. Another shadow value for Bob, he realized, was authority. He had grown up wanting to be collaborative and be seen as collaborative, and feeling like it wasn't okay for him to have authority, even though he was the CEO of this company and did have the right to make decisions about in lots of things, including the compensation packages of the people who worked for him. He had seen colleagues of his in other companies who had been CEOs and had been kind of ejected from those positions because they had been seen as too authoritative. And he really shied away from that as a result. But when he thought deep down inside of himself, what does he value? It is the ability to have authority in his role as CEO. So the first step in honoring our shadow values is simply to acknowledge the fact that they do exist side by side with our ideal values. Just because we've been pushing them down doesn't mean that they're not there. And there is power in lifting them up for ourselves. The second step, what does it mean to honor a shadow value? It means to honor our shadow values in words, in thoughts, or in actions. We don't necessarily need to talk about them in order for us to honor them. So what could it look like for Bob to honor his shadow value of authority? Simply put, it could mean him letting Sally know it was not okay with him for her to yell at him like that. What about financial stability? It could mean, again, for him to just inside of himself acknowledge that he did care about having his company be stable, about having his personal finances be stable, especially at this moment where he was getting ready to sell the company, where he was getting ready to send his child to college. So the question for all of us is, how do we create a pattern-breaking path to enable us to actually honor our shadow values? And we'll see in a few moments how Bob was able to do this. But first, I want to talk about how do we listen to our emotions, because emotions can sometimes make it very difficult for us to take any pattern-breaking action at all. There are three ways that we typically get trapped by our emotions when we're stuck in recurring conflict. The first is what I call the knee-jerk reaction trap. This is when we feel our emotions intensely inside of ourselves and we express them quickly with other people. So you may be feeling angry and you aggress or yell at someone else. The second trap is what I call the lurking emotions trap. And this is where we feel our emotions intensely inside, but we cover them up. We hide them away. So you may be feeling angry, but try to hide it. And of course, those emotions ooze out anyway, wreaking havoc typically on our relationships with other people. The third emotion trap is the inaccessible emotions trap. And that is where we don't feel our emotions particularly intensely inside of ourselves at all. And therefore, it's very difficult for us to express them outwardly with other people. So this makes it very difficult for other people to express empathy towards us because they don't know what we're feeling. And it also can make us very difficult for us to make it very difficult for us to express empathy for other people because we can't, it's hard for us to access that inside of ourselves. So these three traps, you can actually take a quiz online at optimaloutcomesbook.com/assessment to see which of these three traps is the one that you tend to fall into. But regardless of which trap is yours or is the one you tend to fall into, my advice is the same. And that is to identify what you are feeling at any given moment. We can even do this together right now, just to be able to name the emotions as they arise. So just ask yourself, what emotions am I feeling right now? I might be feeling calm, or I might be feeling nervous. I might be feeling engaged, or I might be feeling bored. Just notice, what am I feeling right now? Sometimes when we notice what we're feeling, those emotions will settle and the next emotions will come along. Other times, particularly when we're feeling emotions very intensely inside, the emotions don't settle so easily. So if that's the case, the next step that I recommend is to ask ourselves, what messages are my emotions trying to send me? Anger, for example, typically says, this is not fair. Something here is not right, not just. Fear says, danger ahead, real or perceived. Sadness says, a loss has occurred. Once we have heard the messages that our emotions are trying to send us, the next step is to ask ourselves, what is a constructive action that I can take based on that message? So if you normally yell at other people when you feel angry, what else could you do to acknowledge the unfairness in a situation? Or if you normally freeze when you feel scared, what else could you do to deal with the danger, real or perceived? If you normally dive right back into life when you feel sad, how else could you respond to acknowledge the loss? When Bob asked himself these questions, he first had to acknowledge that he typically fell into the knee-jerk reaction trap. He often felt angry, very, very angry. And what would he do? He would immediately yell back at the other person who was upset with him, or he would pick up the phone and start yelling at someone for that day's client mishap, or he would shoot off a nasty email, right? He would just not be very proud of himself afterwards. So he asked himself, what message are these emotions trying to send me? And what is something constructive that I could do instead? So he could take a few deep breaths, or he could take a walk around the block before he responded. He could ask someone to take a break and then come back together. He thought about all the change makers in history, like Rosa Parks and Nelson Mandela and Martin Luther King Jr., people who took who they felt their anger, and they took constructive action in the face of that anger. They used their anger as a catalyst for constructive social change. So that's what I'm asking you to do here, is to kind of summon your inner catalyst, your inner social change maker, and ask yourself, what's something constructive I could do given the messages that my emotions are sending me? Practice 4. design a pattern-breaking path. What does it mean to design a pattern-breaking path? So there are three components to it. The first one is keep your actions simple. The second one is make your actions surprisingly different from what they've been before. And the third is that each action should build on the one that came before it. So why should you keep your actions simple? Typically, as we've seen, when we're dealing with recurring conflict, the situation is pretty complex. We don't want to add more complexity on top of it. We want to keep our actions simple so that we can track our impact over time and also to help try to ensure that our effects will be what we intend. So for example, if you're like one of my students who was wanting to help, she wanted to help a brother of hers stop drinking. He had an alcohol problem. And she was deciding between staging a family-wide intervention where she and her siblings and her parents would all help her brother in a family-wide conversation to stop drinking and try to convince him that he should stop drinking, or just asking her brother for a conversation because she wanted to catch up with him since it had been a while. Opt for the latter, right? Start simple, start small. You can always build on that over time later, but start small. Ask your brother for a conversation, just one-on-one. So that's simple. What about surprisingly different? Typically, when you make your actions different from what other people expect, it jolts them out of the ways that they would habitually respond as well, which is a good thing. It can be a very good thing. So keep your actions surprisingly different from what they've been in the past. And finally, have one step build upon the next upon the next. A great first step in any pattern-breaking path is to start with yourself. And that is exactly what Bob did. A great thing to do is to use these optimal outcomes practices as a way to do that. And that is also what Bob did. So he began with the mapping practice and he stopped and he paused and he mapped it out like we saw earlier. And I will also like to point out that sometimes pausing and not doing anything in a situation is pattern breaking in and of itself. We're typically so used to doing that just pausing and taking time to reflect on the situation, particularly by mapping it out, is pattern breaking in and of itself. So Bob began by mapping it out. Then he asked himself, what were his shadow values and how could he honor those? Then he looked at his emotions and he asked himself, how could he have constructive action based on the messages that his emotions were trying to send him? And finally, he asked himself, how could he design a pattern-breaking path? And we'll see what he did in a moment. That was his first step. A good second step on any pattern-breaking path is to reach out to one other person on your map. It could be the most obvious other person, which in Bob's case was Sally. Or it might be someone on your map that you hadn't even noticed was there before you did the map, who might help provide some advice or some insight or some help. In Bob's case, he did decide to reach out to Sally. And he decided to do a few things that would be surprisingly different. First of all, because he had been asking her to talk about the compensation package, he decided to just ask her to talk about their working relationship. And also, he recognized that he had been trying to catch her in these informal ways on street corners and such, and that he would ask her to meet in a formal setting to do some things that would be surprisingly different. So he asked her, and she agreed, and they met. And the first thing that he did, again, to do something surprisingly different, was he apologized for his own behavior. He knew that he wasn't happy with how she had treated him, but he also wasn't proud of how he had responded by yelling at her on street corners and things. So he apologized, and she was so kind of taken off guard in a good way. It really jolted her out of the way she normally might have responded. And then he decided to honor his value, his shadow value of authority, by letting her know that it was not okay for them to treat each other like that, to be yelling at each other like that, and it was not okay with him if she yelled at him like that going forward. And then he stopped and he asked her what she had to tell or ask him. And Sally said, you know, it has really been difficult for me that you're bringing up something as important as my compensation package in informal ways, catching me on the street, and also not giving me any time to prepare. I haven't ever seen a proposal of a compensation package from you. And if I ever do see anything from you, it typically is, you know, within minutes of a meeting starting, and I don't have any chance to take a look at anything. So I would really appreciate it if we could meet in formal ways about something as important as this. And I would like some advanced notice, some proposal to react to with time for me to think about it on my own. So he agreed and said he could absolutely do that. And he took responsibility for setting up the next meeting where they would look at the compensation package. And he said he would send her something in advance. And he did do that. So his third step was to set up that meeting, send her a package a week in advance so she had a chance to look at it and prepare. And then they had the next meeting. A good third step on any typical pattern breaking path might be like Bob did, to just meet again with the person that you did already. Or it could be to reach out to more people on your map. So you need to know what is the right thing for you in whatever situation you're in. So when Bob and Sally got back together, that conversation, the third step, was so straightforward because Sally had had a chance to review it. The package wasn't nearly as bad as she had been bracing herself for. She had a few quick logistical questions, and then they agreed that this was a package that made sense. You can imagine Bob was elated. And Sally was really sighing a sigh of relief herself that this was now over and they could get back to repairing and building the trust in their relationship. And eventually they were able to sell their company to one of the largest software companies in the world. So in summary, we just talked about four practices. Map it out, honor shadow values, listen to your emotions, and design a pattern-breaking path. When you use these practices, you will free yourself from situations that previously seemed impossible to solve. And when you do, you will likely experience a physical freedom that comes along with conflict freedom, a lightness in your step, a sigh of relief. I know this is true because I've seen it happen for so many of my clients and students and myself as well. And I know it's possible for you too. When conflict resolution fails, free yourself instead. Do something different, something pattern breaking. You don't need to wait for anyone else to agree with you. You can take pattern breaking action on your own. So again, in summary, when you find yourself stuck on that conflict loop, you want to take pattern-breaking action using some of the practices that we just talked about. You want to imagine into the future, what is that optimal outcome that I can imagine in my ideal? Also taking into account the reality of the situation and the people who I'm working with and who I am, the reality of who I am. And then you want to design, test, and ultimately take a pattern-breaking path to get out of that conflict loop into the optimal outcomes loop, which becomes its own self-reinforcing loop. There are a ton of resources online to help you do everything that we just talked about. So if you go to optimaloutcomesbook.com/resources, you will find the conflict mapping software and template that we just used. You'll find a lot of different resources for identifying what are your ideal values, what are your shadow values. There's an inventory to help you do that. And then there's step-by-step instructions on how to actually honor your shadow values and other people's shadow values. You can take the quiz about the emotion traps online as well there at optimaloutcomesbook.com/resources. And there's also a conflict habits assessment as well. So there's just a ton of resources. You can also sign up for our newsletter at optimaloutcomesbook.com/contact, where we send out advice and writing and things to help you achieve optimal outcomes at work, at home, and in all areas of life multiple times per month. You can also email me at jgoldman@alignmentstrategiesgroup.com with any questions. I'd be delighted to talk with you. And you can find us also as well on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, and also on Instagram. So please stay in touch. Thank you so much. I look forward to staying in touch with you.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, leadx.org, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?